So Retro Press X is back in your podcast feeds. Welcome along. If you are new to this place, well, welcome. Firstly, here we choose some of the original Press X episodes from back in the day, as we can share them now on places like Spotify and Apple for the first time, and we put them here, and we do it every Thursday, and we share the fresh stuff on a Tuesday. So welcome along to Retro Press X. Now this time, we're taking a trip back to January 2021, and Chris Stark, off of Capital Radio these days on the Peter Crouch podcast, who was on Radio 1 at the time, well, Chris joined us to talk about getting back into gaming after some time away. And the rest of the team who are with us this episode review some bangers, right? We're talking Hyrule Warriors, we're talking Control, and we're talking Rust. Last week you picked Breath of the Wild for your Hall of Game choice, and you're staying in the same ballpark for today.
Yeah, today I'm going to be reviewing Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity on the Nintendo Switch, which came out the tail end of 2020.
Yeah, a lot of people who loved Breath of the Wild are excited to play that. So I'm looking forward to hearing what you've got to say about Hyrule Warriors. That's Einel's game today. Now, player two, we've got Shay back in today. Shay, a new episode, new location for you. I can't keep up. You're always somewhere different.
I'm playing musical chairs with my locations, basically, you know, just whatever I wake up and feel like in the morning, you know, lockdown. I need to do something different to feel alive, to feel something.
From the bedroom to the living room to the kitchen, you're mixing it up.
To my mum's house sometimes, you know, just wherever.
Now, the game you're talking about today is one that was basically nominated for every single award going when it came out, wasn't it? It was a real big hit with the critics. Control.
It was. Yeah. And as usual, I got a lot of stuff to say about word Control. It's a very interesting but very weird game, and I can't wait to talk some more about it.
Okay. I'm looking forward to it as well. It'll tie into what I need a bit of help with later on. I think Control's one of those. Now, Rage, you're in the player three chair today, and it's interesting because this game that you're going to talk about, I feel like out of absolutely nowhere, you know, this happens with games sometimes, isn't it? It's like nobody's talking about this. It's been out for a few years, sort of most people have thought forgotten about it. And then all of a sudden, everyone, it seems, who is a streamer or a YouTuber, is playing this game at the moment, Rust. What is happening? Why? Where? What is it? What's going on?
it's like a hot potato, you know? It's like a hot flavor of the month, and it seems to be Rust. It's like, I think YouTubers and streamers get bored of their same old mundane game that they play all the time, and then when they see someone else having fun, they're like, oh, I want to do that. So now everyone is playing Rust in some way, shape or form. Either they're watching it or they're playing it.
Yeah. Now, if you don't know what Rust is either, don't worry about it. We'll explain all later on in the podcast. Now, I had this message from Tom on Instagram, who's loving the podcast, but he says that I introduce you all too quickly. And so he wants to follow you on the socials and wants to find you. So, sorry, Tom, if I'm just keen to get going, you know, I want to get into the meat of the issues, right? So, if Tom's looking to find you guys on the socials, Einel, where can he find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Einel, I-N-E-L, or on Twitch or YouTube, Einelius, I-N-E-L-I-O-U-S.
Rage.
Rage Darling on everything, basically.
You're one of those that got in early, so you got the same name.
Yeah.
So lucky.
Yeah. I actually took my own name on Twitch as Rage Darling, lost my password, and then had to, 5 years later, decide that I would go from Rage _ Darling and recover my original account. So I am Rage Darling.
There we are. And Shay, where are you?
So smart. On Instagram, I am moods.gif. And on Twitter, I am moods_JPG. There's a theme, you know, it's all about aesthetics.
Oh, yeah, I like it. Very good. Mm. And also, Tom.
I'm waiting for the dot.
And also, Tom, like I said to you on Instagram, hashtag PressX to continue on Twitter is going to help you find all of our stuff too. But thank you very much for listening. Thanks for messaging in. I hope you get to find everybody. And everybody else is on that hashtag as well. So you'll find Gav and Glenn, who are our other regulars as well. They'll be on that hashtag. Now, we've also got Chris Stark from Radio 1 and the Peter Crouch podcast coming on later. He's chatting about getting back into gaming. It's something that loads of people have been doing over the last few months, and even more so now, I suppose, with another lockdown on. But before we get into him, before we get into the reviews, I'm in a rut, gang, right? Oh. I'm struggling, okay, and I need some advice.
Come on, Steph, talk to us. We're friends here.
So I don't know what to do. I don't know what to play. I feel like I'm in limbo. It's post that Christmas period where I was playing a lot of games with friends. I want something to get my teeth stuck into, but also I don't want to give my life away to a game at the moment. You know what I mean? Because things change in a lot, and sometimes you're up, sometimes you're down. And like we talked about on last week's podcast, I've got loads of unfinished games, but they're all quite intimidating. They're Assassin's Creed Valhalla, Cyberpunk. They're 40, 50-hour experiences that I can't picture getting to the end of easily. So I just, any suggestions of like good 5, 6, 7-hour experiences you can get your teeth stuck into, but I need something to get my mojo back. This happened to me before a couple of years ago, and I played a game called Firewatch, which is an indie game.
Oh, yes.
I finished it in a night, and it gave me a real good experience, and I got back into it. But at the moment, I'm just stealing 40 minutes here, playing a bit of Call of Duty, 40 minutes there, a bit of FIFA, a bit of Rocket League at the moment. But it's all throwaway experiences. I want something a bit more. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
I do. Mm. Well, my first thing would be, do you like sci-fi?
Yeah, I love sci-fi. Yeah, sci-fi is my jam. Yeah.
Do you like the original Alien film?
Are you not going to get me to play Alien Isolation?
No.
Because I'm scared.
I'm not. Have you ever played Observation?
No, I haven't.
Observation is a fantastic game set on a space station in space, and you play the ship's UI. And there's been some sort of disasters happened, and you have to kind of get the systems back online on the space station and help out the survivors that's still on the space station. I don't want to spoil anything other than that, but the way you utilize and the mechanics of the game are all to do with you being the UI, and you're getting orders from survivors and things, and you have to go into like your systems to diagnose different things. And it's a very short game, 4 to 5 hour survival thriller.
Sounds good. Shay, you were pointing your finger then. You were tapping your hands in agreement.
I was, because that's a really good shout. I was thinking of like kind of small contained experiences, and something that came to mind, like I'm into sort of like walking simulators. I think Gone Home is a really good shout, like in terms of like a small, you know, kind of couple of hours, kind of a contained experience where like I think you're a sibling who's like gone back home to kind of figure out what's happened to your family. Really, really intense story. It's very gripping. It kind of stays with you for a long time. There's no shooting, there's no intense you don't need to be really dexterous to do it. I think you'll have a time. It's kind of bleak, so I mean it's in theme with what's going on in the world.
Shay, you're choosing a bleak game. What a surprise.
What a surprise. Like, who could have seen that coming?
I tell you what, though, both of those games on Game Pass. Hey,
there you go.
Come on.
We needed the Game Pass plug.
Come on.
So the ones I had written down, things I was going to try, was Ori and the Will of the Wisps.
Okay.
A Way Out, because I feel like I could play that.
I was about to say that.
That's a good game. That's a great game.
You can play it with someone, right, Ridge?
You can, yes.
Well,
it's a story. Yeah, it's a story where you play one character, one of the main characters, and then someone else you play with plays with the other one. It's a great experience. Honestly, you should play it with your partner, because I played it with mine and we felt like we were working together. Well, there's a part, I won't spoil it, but you have to work with your partner back to back, literally back to back, climbing up something, and the communication that you have to have between each other is just so funny.
It's going to test the relationship.
That's what I need right now, is testing my relationship. Is it? Been together for 13 years and it all goes to pot with one game of A Way Out.
The one really good thing I do like about A Way Out is it has a thing where it gives you a code so you can give to a friend to play the game with you for free. So only one person has to buy it, but then two people can play it, which is a fantastic thing. I want to see that more of that.
That is wicked. Okay, well, look, that's given me some food for thought. If you're listening to this and you feel where I'm coming from, and just I'm not getting anything. I need nutrients. Do you know what I mean? I'm playing for the sake of it at the moment. You know, I just like, I go on, you know, fine, I dropped 40 kills on Nuketown in Call of Duty, whatever. But it's not giving me anything, you know? And
I mean, there's all this talk. We've never seen video proof.
Whoa, that's the
right now.
All these lies.
I'm going to share you video proof right now. So, yeah, those are some great suggestions. I'm definitely going to try those out. If you've got any thoughts to me, then I'd really appreciate you helping me out. It's hashtag PressX to continue. Find me on the socials and send your suggestions over. Okay, great. Those are some good ones. You see where I'm coming from, right? Have you ever felt like this, Ainel?
It does. It happens, you know, it usually happens during a new year. A lot of people, they either get some games for Christmas and then they play through them, then they want to know what's next. But they don't, and like you said, they feel intimidated by some of the larger games. And they sometimes you just want like short bursts of real fun, creative games. And sometimes it's hard to find them because the big AAA games, the huge ones, always take up most of the conversation. And a lot of the smaller titles that are only 4 to 5 hours in length, sometimes they kind of get lost. So, but the ones we suggested, I highly suggest, like, everybody who's listening to this, play all three of those because they're fantastic games, all three of them.
And they're not stuff like Cyberpunk where you're talking hours and hours of commitment. Like, they're stuff that you could play, like, in one sitting.
Yeah,
if you
all
really
of those
like,
games could probably be finished in under 10 hours.
Because I love getting into a big open world, you know, game and losing it. Like we talked about before, Witcher 3 is one of my favourite games, but I'm not in the headspace to do that at the moment, I don't think, which is why I was looking for something different. But I'm definitely going to check those out. Let us know what you think. Hashtag press X to continue. But let's get into it then. Shay Control, tell us about it. So it's a PS4 and Xbox One game and available on Nintendo Switch. It'll set you back around £30. There are next gen versions coming in February. But if people have missed the Control bandwagon, what is it?
So, if you're familiar with the Barbican building in London, if you take that as a setting, throw in the FBI for some reason, a lot of like David Lynch references, and just a lot of weird stuff, that's Control. It's a very hard to describe game because it's like a walk-in simulator, actually, because you're walking around a building trying to find out what happened to your brother, but then like at one point you have to fight a fridge. I remember describing this to somebody once. So I was like, I'm really stuck on the fight where I'm like, you know, trying to shoot and kill this fridge. And they were like, is everything okay? It's like, actually, no, it's not. It's like really, really arresting visuals. It's gorgeous to look at. Very hard combat, I'd say. It's actually quite fresh in my mind because a friend of mine who has sort of taken a break from games in the last couple of years was like, oh, you know what, recommend me something. I was like, Control, it's gorgeous. He's actually really struggling with it. So it's actually pretty challenging gameplay. It's like a third person shooter. You've got like really cool abilities where you can like rip the environment out and like protect yourself and then like throw at enemies as well. Like it's really, really cool. Very, very weird. I can't stress that enough. It's so
it's
weird.
It's a third person action game in if you were to really in a sentence, but it, obviously with all that sort of mystic telepathy stuff going on in the background.
Yeah, it's like, because it's weird, like the character starts talking and I'm like, who is she talking to? And it turns out she's actually talking to you. I was like, is she losing her mind? Like, what on earth is going on? She's actually talking to you. So there's a bit of like almost like fourth wall breaking and yeah, it's very odd. And I don't know if people are like familiar with like Twin Peaks or anything, but it very much pulls on that as well. Like there's a very specific level that I won't like spoil or anything because it's very cool. But I was like, the developers are big fans of Twin Peaks. Obviously.
It was IGN's game of 2019. It was nominated for best game in the BAFTAs, best game in the Game Awards, nominated in basically every category going. What makes this different to any other sort of game that's out there?
That's a very good question.
Why did it hit home so much? Is it? I mean, I could be harsh and say that in 2019, very few good games came out. Is that just why? Or
we are going to fall out. How dare you? 2019 was a wicked year for games. Like Disco Elysium, Sekiro, Shadows Die Twice, Control. Like, I mean, not Death Stranding, but I was thinking of the best game category at the BAFTAs. Like, but I think what it is the visuals definitely is a big part. Like are a big part of the experience. I don't think I've played very much that looks like it. And I think the tone of the game, because it is weird, but Like, there's something about it that, like, from the first 10 minutes, I was hooked. It's very, yeah. very much grounded in its own lore. And there's something about that that is quite charming. Like you said, like, you'd be reading, like, almost like FBI dossiers, and they'll talk about, like, the powers that come from fridges and, like, a kind of merry-go-round and stuff like that. And it feels very odd, but because the game really does believe in all of that stuff, you're like, okay, yeah, cool, I'm going to go and get some powers from this horse on this merry-go-round.
you like to suspend your disbelief rage. You spend your time in Azeroth, you know?
I do.
What do you control? Something that would interest you?
Do you know, I actually got given control to play, but I didn't actually get around to playing it because I watched a couple of like videos of like gameplay, just quick like snippets and stuff, and it didn't really seem like my type of thing. But I'm so intrigued in this fridge idea. You keep mentioning fridges and it keeps making me laugh. So maybe it is the kind of like humorous, like slight comedic game that I would kind of like be into. But I wish I gave it a go now rather than steering clear of it.
Yeah, like it is one of those things. It's very understated in the humor. That's a really good point, actually. And it's something I didn't appreciate the first time I played it through. And then the second time I was like, right, okay, I get this now. Mm. And yeah, like there's a character in there that's very odd. He's like a janitor. He's always cleaning up nothing, but then has like really weird quips to give you. I'm like, what is going on? Literally, yeah, very, very well.
It's essentially Twin Peaks the video game.
Yeah,
it?
Yeah.
It's you're never quite sure what's going on. Everybody else seems to be in on something that you've yet to kind of catch up on, and you're constantly trying to push forward in the story because you want to know more. And I guess it's that kind of same hook that I guess I know some people didn't like it, but Death Stranding kind of had, where it was like so intriguing in such a surreal way that you want to keep pressing on because you want to find out what this mystery is. And Control is very kind of similar to that in a kind of same way. I will say it's one of the I think it was like one of the first games to kind of really showcase ray tracing on PC as well.
Yes, yeah.
One of the first ones to kind of really show, and because of this kind of a minimalistic look in terms of some of the designs, and the reflections look real nice if you've got a powerful PC. So I can't wait for the next gen versions because they will look really nice. But if I guess the way I would describe this game is it's similar to Remedy's previous games. They were the original guys that did Max Payne series, yeah. And Quantum Break,
which was that game which had a TV series mashed in the middle of it, right?
Mm. I loved that. Everyone hated it.
Well, it was supposed to be like a big selling point for Xbox. I can remember when they announced it, it was Gamescom, they announced it. I can remember interviewing the cast at the time because they had some big actors in.
The cast was fantastic. Lance Frederick, come on.
Yeah, it had, what was it, Iceman? Was it Iceman from X-Men?
What's his name? Come on, everyone, we can do this. Iceman? Let's Google.
I've not seen X-Men, I'm very apologetic.
Oh, Bobby.
Yes. What's his real name? I feel so bad.
I should know.
So, we can
put this
out. Oh, the guy that was in Man of Medan as well.
Yes.
Come on.
Sean Ashmore.
Sean Ashmore.
Thank you, mate.
Yes.
And it had the guy from Lost, because Lost was...
It did,
The
yes.
guy from Lost.
And Game of Thrones.
Yeah, it's a big... Yeah, Quantum. So they always do games, don't they, Remedy, where you're sort of playing with time and mind-bending and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got a similar vibe to Alan Wake, if anyone played that as well, which is also by them. And it's as I said, it's got that kind of surreal kind of nature. It feels like it's like the early noughties kind of vibe of kind of TV shows that are around, like Buffy and things like that. And it's unique. It's definitely unique, but it has like still got like really cool shooting mechanics, like Shay was describing. You got your slow-mo, you can grab like things out of chunks of debris out of pillars and you throw it at people. It feels like the Matrix, like when you're having some of the shootouts, and the fact that you can just like zoom around the battlefield with different powers and things. So it's really cool.
So who is this for, Shay? Who is it for?
Who's this for? Well, I mean, it wouldn't be me if I didn't have gripes with it. So my thing is, like, if you're somebody who's not really dexterous or not really familiar with, like, shooters, you might want to avoid this. But if you're like, okay, I like Call of Duty, I like shooting stuff, you want an actually interesting experience, I'd say go for Control. My thing with this game is it should have just been a walking simulator. If you were walking around trying to uncover this mystery and you were able to still, like, throw stuff around but didn't have to shoot, 10 out of 10 game. The shoot, like, it becomes laborious after a while. I'm like, does everything have to be shooting? It's like the least, like, innovative and interesting, like, kind of attack in a lot of games. But yeah, if not for that, it would have been 10 out of 10. So if you like shooting, you want to try something a bit interesting, it's also not a super long game. It's about like 10 hours, which, you know, is rare for a big AAA title. I'd say definitely give it.
Okay, let's try and figure out what the Metacritic score for this is then, Rage. What do you think, judging by what you've seen? I mean, the critics can't have been that good if it didn't entice you to play it at the time when you got given a copy.
Yeah. I mean, it was like the first ray tracing game, right? From what I remember, or the first one that showcases ray tracing very, very well. So I'd say that based off of that, it probably got a high score-ish. I'd say like 86%.
86 from Rage. Aynel, what are you saying?
Yeah, I think the critics liked this one. I think they liked it. I struggled. I haven't got like a ray traced graphics card, so like my PC was struggling to run it.
Yeah, the potato graphics card.
Yeah, I'm waiting for like the next, like the console next gen version, because like as much as I did enjoy playing it, I knew this game could look 10 times better than what I was playing. But I'd go with 89.
Okay, and then Shay?
I'm going to say 84.
Okay, so I'm going to... The score I've got is the PlayStation 4 version. So let me just get the PC one up as well, just for comparison. So the PS4 score was 82. Mm-hmm. And the PC version, obviously, so we were talking about the ray tracing, which was only available on the PC at the time and won't really kick in until the next gen versions on consoles. The PC version got 85. So it's in its mid-80s. Okay. So solid. And like we said, it was IGN's Game of the Year in 2019. It was nominated for a bunch of awards when it came out. Won a couple of BAFTAs too. That's Shay's review of Control. Let us know what you think. Did you love it? Did you hate it? Hashtag press X to continue. It might be a game that I could try, actually, if it's only 10, 12 hours long, to refind my mojo, as it were. Let us know what you think. Hashtag press X to continue. Now, Aynel.
Yes.
I was in the Newsbeat office, and we've got a couple of big Nintendo Zelda fans in the Radio 1 Newsbeat office, right? Chris Smith, who read the news on Radio 1 for years, and Steve Holden, our music reporter.
Did I insult them with my...
No. They still playing Breath of the Wild now, and they finished it both about two or three times. So they were on board with your Breath of the Wild decision. Although, interestingly, Owen, our social media guy, has got a bone to pick with you about picking Breath of the Wild over Ocarina of Time. Anyway, let's not get back into that.
Look at Shay's face. Look what you did. You knew what you were starting.
Shay's finger pointing again.
Breath of the Wild is not better than Ocarina of Time, but we will have this out later.
I feel like we might have to do one episode and just get everybody in and say, okay, let's have it out. Breath of the Wild versus
Ocarina. Versus everyone.
You literally, because you're wrong.
If you don't know what we're talking about, in last week's episode, Aynel made a choice for the Hall of Game. We've referenced it once already, but he chose a Zelda Breath of the Wild to be in our Hall of Game, which is obviously a fantastic game. But a lot of people have taken offence because he chose that over Ocarina of Time.
They have taken... Do you know what? Hold on, Steph. Hold on. I didn't have no bone to pick with anyone else. Like, Shay chose Street Fighter. There's many better Street Fighters than she.
No, we're getting into it.
Did you hear me say anything? I didn't say nothing.
No, we're getting into it.
Choice. Well done. Everyone's coming for me about Breath of the Wild.
They are. And also...
And your wrong opinions. Your opinions are wrong.
What Street Fighter... Well, I mean, not to go off on a tangent, but what Street Fighter is better than Street Fighter 2?
Street Fighter 3!
Oh, come off it.
Alpha?
Come off
Street
it.
Street Fighter Alpha? Behave yourself.
Alpha series, come on. Yes.
Would you be well?
Street Fighter Alpha
come
3,
on.
Definitely.
I'm not having this.
Street Fighter 3 Third Strike, definitely. Oh, come on.
I actually prefer Second Impact. This isn't the conversation with us now, though. Let's not do this, because...
This is Steph's fault. He knew what he was doing.
This is nothing to do with me. And also, let's not forget, Rage isn't getting away with this. She still hasn't played GoldenEye. So, you're not getting away with this either.
I'm Switzerland, man. I ain't new none. I'm sitting here.
It's all... Hey, look, 2021's been a... Right,
when we do that pod, I'm having Rage on my side. Come on.
Hey, look, 2021's been tough for everyone already, okay? Let's not... Let's... Everybody,
let's not fall that.
No, let's not fall that.
Let's all be zen. You've been helping me this morning. Let's okay. Deep breath, everyone. Deep breath. So anyway, following on from that Zelda conversation last week, they were super excited when Hyrule Warriors was announced, because even though it's not Breath of the Wild, it's set in the same world and it's a similar aesthetic. It's a Nintendo Switch exclusive. You can get it for about £40. For people who've missed it, Einel, what's going on?
So this is like a follow-on story, or almost like a prequel story to Breath of the Wild. So if you played Breath of the Wild on the Wii U or the Nintendo Switch, you're going to love this one. Because basically, Breath of the Wild's story was a bit... It was okay. But there was a lot of references to what happened 100 years previous. As you go through the game, there's a lot of characters that reference what happened in the past. And you see remnants of what happened in terms of derelict buildings and things like that. Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity takes you back 100 years to that moment in time where there was a massive war in the Kingdom of Hyrule. And it puts you in the thick of it. And this is like a Dynasty Warriors type of game. So if you've ever played any of the Dynasty Warrior games that kind of got quite popular in the PS2 era, it's a hack and slash kind of fighting game where you're running around the world and you're taking on hundreds of people at once. And you play as Link as well as loads of different other characters in the Zelda franchise. You play as some of the champions like Ubersa, and you basically go around slaughtering everyone in order to kind of save the kingdom. And it's really fun, and it's a really interesting story, because straight off the bat there's more cutscenes in the intro 20 minutes of the game than there is probably in the entire of Breath of the Wild on the Switch. The animations are fantastic in terms of how they've kind of crafted this story, and I don't want to spoil it. I'm trying to talk around spoilers, but ultimately, if you've played Breath of the Wild, you know what happens at the end of this game. But how you get there and the journey is what you're playing.
So because the playstyle is very different to Breath of the Wild, a lot of Breath of the Wild fans have not necessarily jumped on to Hyrule Warriors, because there is more action orientated, like you say. It's a totally, even though it looks the same, it looks similar, it is very different. Do you think that they're right to avoid it? If you love Breath of the Wild, you should be playing this game.
If you love Breath of the Wild, you should play this game, because it enriches the whole world, and it also gives you a greater appreciation of the things that happened in Breath of the Wild when playing through this and when finding out the story beats. And the combat is really fun. It's really simple to kind of pick up and play. And one of the best things about it that I really enjoy, it's two-player local co-op for the entire campaign of the game. So you and a friend can go out back to back, slashing all these moblins and goblins and all sorts of beasts. You can run to that side of the map fighting like 200 people over there. Your friend can be on the other side of the map fighting hundreds of people over there, doing a completely separate objective, and you can come together for like a boss battle, things like that. It's a really fun hack and slash. It's very different. You don't get to kind of do as much exploring and stuff like you did in Breath of the Wild. But once you kind of get to grips that this is like a fun pick up and play hack and slash with a really cool story that deepens your understanding of the Zelda franchise, I think you'd like it.
Yeah, what's nice about it is that it's just like Dynasty Warriors, but like reskinned with, you know, the sort of Legend of Zelda world, which is like infinitely more interesting. And like with I actually really like a lot of the Dynasty Warriors games, because they like really empower you. You feel so cool, like slashing up like all of these kind of old school characters and stuff. But after like Dynasty Warriors 8, I was like, I need another, please. And that's why Hyrule Warriors is so good.
I guess for people who've sort of For Honor, is it? Is that a sort of, would you say, is that the Ubisoft sort of similar sort of vibe? Is that what you're getting in from, if people haven't played the Dynasty Warriors franchise?
I'll be honest, I've not played that. I have not played For Honor, but I guess it's similar, I guess.
Yeah, it's the idea of you fighting against, in the middle of a hunt of a massive pitched battle, basically, isn't it? You're sort of a small part of something.
For Honor was more about the kind of mechanics of like dueling people.
Yeah, which is why I couldn't stick with it.
Yeah, Hyrule Warriors is, you literally, you slash your sword and 10 goblins go flying, and and it's that kind of thing, and it's all about getting like your KO meter up. Like each level you're probably taking out like 1,000 enemies at a time, and you've got lots of different moves, and what's really nice is they reference the Breath of the Wild kind of abilities as well. So you have similar abilities in terms of like throwing bombs, using your arrows, and every character plays different. And you can, and many missions, you can select which character you want to take in. So you can choose if you want to play as Link, you can actually play as Zelda in this one if you want to play as Zelda. And then there's a whole cast of different other characters in the game that you can kind of take control of. Don't want to spoil it because there's some really cool ones.
Yeah, of course.
But it's, you could, like, everyone plays differently. And as you acquire them in the story, you find out why they're coming on to help out, and you find out what the backstory is going on. And it makes sense because you connect the dots. So if you've ever played Breath of the Wild, you connect the dots. You're like, okay, that happened because of this. This happened because of that back then. And it's a really fun kind of insight, and a second companion game to Breath of the Wild if you enjoyed Breath of the Wild.
Is that tickling your fancy, Rage?
I do like the idea of more co-op games, because I think in this day and age when everyone's so connected with the internet, you can just Discord call someone and, like, you know, you guys can play like League or WoW or something. But I like finding games that are like local co-op or co-op where you can actually just sit and play the same sort of private game, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It seems to have gone out of fashion.
I miss it so much.
I really like that idea. But would you recommend someone playing Breath of the Wild first before this one, or can they just jump straight into this one?
You can jump straight in, because this is it. They play completely different. I think you'd appreciate the game more if you have played Breath of the Wild. But the good thing about this, the story is a prequel to what happens in Breath of the Wild, so you can play this first, and if you enjoy it, go and play Breath of the Wild, and you're continuing the story where this one finishes. And so it's like you can play them out of order and you can appreciate them. They kind of go hand in hand. But I will say, on your point about local co-op, I so miss it, man. Like, it used to be the standard. Used to be local co-op first, then online. It had to have local co-op before it had online. Now it's just online and there's no split screen. This is one of the only split screen games I can think of made by a AAA company in a long time.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, since we're talking co-op, if you like that idea of you both playing at the same time, we mentioned Way Out earlier, and Mainla talking about Hyrule Warriors here, Overcooked, the Overcooked series, Overcooked 1 or 2, that's probably the best experience I've had local co-op recently. Yeah. That's super great.
Streets of Rage 4 as well was local co-op. I did that with my sister, who really doesn't play that very many games, but we enjoyed doing that together.
Anything
That's
else
really
that
good.
People we can suggest as we're talking local co-ops?
Good Job on the Nintendo Switch. It's like, it came out in April when, and it kind of got lost during the conversation because Last of Us came out at the same time. But Good Job is a game where you play the son or daughter of a CEO who runs a massive company, and you get hired at the bottom rungs and you work your way up. And the way in which you play the game in two-player co-op is you're trying to complete your objectives without breaking and smashing as many things as possible, because you're incompetent. And so you got two people, and like one task would be, you got to fix the Wi-Fi. The Wi-Fi is busted in the office, so you got to bring the Wi-Fi router over, but you got to plug the Wi-Fi router over there, and then you got to ping it around there, and then all of a sudden a wall comes down because you've just let go of something and it's exploded something. So it's a really fun co-op game. It's really short as well. You can finish it in about 6-7 hours with a friend. The entire game you could play co-op.
That was the game that's just come to me now. It's Devolver Digital's Heave Ho. It's a really fun game to play local co-op. Anyway, we've gone on a bit of a tangent there. Hyrule Warriors. Shay, what are you saying the Metacritic score is for Hyrule Warriors? What are the critics saying?
I think people don't seem to really vibe with the Hyrule Warriors series, because even the first one people didn't like that much, and I loved it. I'm going to say 71.
Strong 71 there from Shade Rage. What are you going with?
I've never heard of the game before. I completely clueless, to be honest. But I've just played.
Pick
WoW,
a number. Stab
so...
and have a little poke in the dark.
I'm going to say 80.
80, a big 80 there. You've really sold it, I know, Claire, for Rage.
I want to play it.
You'd love it. Local co-op, come on.
Local co-op. Back to that.
That's a massive seller for me. If a game has local co-op, I'm down.
Was it a massive seller for the critics, though, Aina? That's the question.
I think 82, I reckon. I think critics liked it. It's really well polished. It uses some of the same kind of character models from Breath of the Wild. It feels like you are playing Breath of the Wild at some points because it looks identical. It's not one of those things where a third-party game's making like their own kind of version of this series. It feels like, no, this is this series. And this is the official canon story of what happened 100 years ago, which is great. So 82.
82. Okay, well, the actual Metacritic score was 78.
Oh, wow.
78. Ooh, okay. So high 70s, not quite in the 80s. So I think a lot of people had that same... they're a bit sniffy about it because it's a hack and slash game, isn't it? Because, you know, the Breath of the Wild is like... It's more... People think of it as more, I don't know, not creative, but a bit more like proper because it's an action and it's in a, you know, you get to explore more. Whereas if you're just hacking buttons, as fun as that is, I think, for people, I think maybe that's why critics
are a bit
sniffy.
I think it's always been a dream of like Zelda fans to be in big battles and like hack and slash their way, because throughout the entire Zelda series, you've always heard of these massive battles and they only appeared in cutscenes or were referenced. And this is your first opportunity to play in a massive battle.
Yeah, and like for me, the massive appeal was like getting to play as like Zelda and Sheik, who are characters that you didn't have control of, and getting to see them do like really, really cool stuff was amazing.
Well, let us know what you think of Hyrule Warriors. Did you give it a miss, or are you stuck in there like I know, loving the co-op hack and slash action? Then let us know, hashtag press X to continue. Now, you know, we talked about this earlier, lockdowns have been a time for people to get back into gaming. And that is definitely something that Chris Stark from Radio 1 is keen to do. He's a friend of the pod. He's already tried to help us get a petition to Parliament to stop people from rage quitting in FIFA. He's Rage's mate and competed with Rage in a tournament, he was telling us, Rage.
Yeah, we did quite a few games, and some of which he'd never played before. But you know what? He did really well.
He said, well, he's looking to get back into his games, and he's a mate of the pod, and we've been having a chat.
Well, I did this gaming tournament recently and I met a few, because I'm not really in this world properly, and I love gaming, but I feel like I'm more of an outsider. And I did this gaming tournament recently and it was really, really fun. I went to somewhere called the Belong Arena and I wasn't aware like this. And it's really close to Radio 1. And it blew my mind. And I wasn't aware that there was somewhere that was genuinely so cool. And like an area for gaming that wasn't just an internet cafe or people huddled together somewhere. Like it was decked out like a proper arena. And it was exciting. And I felt excited being there. And it just looked really, really cool. And I was there with some gamers for this tournament. I've never felt properly in with this gaming crowd. And speaking to these guys, and they were so accepting of me, I suddenly realized, actually, you don't need to be a professional. You can still be in at this level and still explore that passion, still try and get the gaming set up and get a decent chair in and have a look at the equipment you're using. So now that's what I'm trying to do. And I'm lucky enough to have a bit of a garage here, and I want to do it up, and I want to have a proper gaming setup. I don't want it to be just the thing attached to the TV.
Yeah.
Occasionally I have to get out, you know, install a load of updates. And then if I'm lucky, eventually get to play a game. I want it to kind of run itself a bit more and feel a bit more in control of it all.
Yeah, and I guess that's what's really interesting and brilliant about gaming, especially if you're getting back into it, is you have your pro gamers and the jazzy setups, but then you've also just got mates who play FIFA after work or whatever, you know, there's a scale.
I mean, that's me. For me, I play a lot of FIFA because, you know, I've got the radio in the day and then I come home at night. And, you know, I'm a bit football obsessed. And sometimes...
That's funny, you don't mention it.
Sometimes I just want to let stress out. You can't play football at the moment as well, which bugs me. So the next best thing to real football is FIFA. And in some ways, it's I don't want to say it's better, but obviously I can't play for Watford. I can't play for Man United. I can't play for a big team. But there is something amazing about taking control of a team, especially when you're in the kind of mindset where you really want to get involved.
Yeah.
But I love just going online. I love that you can be paired with someone, you know, someone around the world is playing against you and you're playing a game of FIFA.
Yeah, that is cool, isn't it? I don't know about you, Chris, but I used to be really competitive. I would have described myself as like a mid-table Premiership team, you know? But now I'm very much relegation fodder, getting humped 5-0 every time I play. A bit like Sheffield United.
When you play FIFA, you seem to move up through the leagues, but then it's baffling. Like, you just go through a spell of getting, in your words, humped, sort of 6-7 games in a row.
Yeah.
Get relegated, but then you'll go up again and it'll be absolutely fine. Like, I still don't understand how the leagues work as you're moving through it. And I'd be fascinated to know the algorithms.
So do you usually play online against randomers? Do you tend to play against people you know? How do you like to do it?
I keep having issue with updates. Games, consoles, it's infuriating.
Yeah.
And I still, even when it's on automatically, I still seem to be having to update stuff. Like, I'm clearly doing something wrong and it's really bugging me. So the problem is with a game like FIFA, or I've recently started playing Black Ops, and when you play those games and there needs to be an update, you're very limited in what you can play if you want to play offline whilst those updates are happening. So I find myself having to do the skills games on FIFA, because it's no fun just playing against like an actual match against FIFA. It doesn't feel the same once you're used to playing people.
Yeah.
There's not enough in it for me.
No.
But I use it as a bit of training. So if it's updating and offline, it takes you offline, then I'll do a few of the skill games. And same with Black Ops.
It's got a professional approach.
It is. You know, but it's frustrating. Mate, it's frustrating. It's a bit like when you've thrown a bit of a kind of cheap frozen pizza into the bottom of a freezer, right? And you need something to eat and you're back a bit late from work or whatever, college, whatever, and you throw in the kind of that pizza that you didn't really want.
Yeah.
It's just a bit disappointing. This should be a good time right now. I should be eating a takeaway pizza. You know, I should be playing. This is my time. Sometimes of an evening, this is when I was younger, what I would do is set two teams off, turn the commentary off and do my own commentary for FIFA matches.
Oh, yeah. If you're not commentating when you're playing FIFA, I think it's a little bit of you dead inside.
But to turn off the commentary and sit there and do like a real time. Also, have you tried ever setting it to 40-minute halves, 45-minute halves? Like, it's a nice idea, but you get about 5 minutes into it, you're like, it's not quite the same.
It's like one of my mates is like, I tell you what we're going to do is we're going to play a real-life test match in Brian Lara cricket.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, nice idea and all.
Yeah, yeah. Have you ever played Crouchy in any of these?
Yeah, that's a good point. I have, yeah. And now that I know Crouchy a bit, it's quite funny when I play him. I've played FIFA against him. But yeah, I quite like just putting him in the team as well. I quite like being able to control him, to physically control him. Because in real life, he's very hard to control. You know, it's, you say be here at this time, and you know, he doesn't always turn up at that time. And it's easier to control on FIFA. But also, he was a weapon on those games, you know, for obvious reasons. He was tall, he really stood out on the game.
Yeah.
We did a little FIFA tournament, actually. They set it up so that it was a whole team of Crouches, which was mad. Just like these massively tall players in the whole team.
But it's quite helpful because in goal, obviously, covers a lot of the goal. You know,
yeah,
can clear the ball in the air.
Well, that's what you can do with FIFA, can't you? You can settle football arguments. So, for example, would a whole team of defenders beat a whole team of attackers?
Yes.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
It's that immovable force meets an unstoppable object. I think that's right. I think that's from Batman. I'm not sure.
It works for me, mate. When he plays, is he like still super competitive? Because I've interviewed, we've spoken to James Maddison recently and Dele Alli, and they were both annoyed with their FIFA stats, because I think every professional football player in the world is annoyed.
Yeah, but FIFA does that on purpose, don't they?
Yeah, just
I'm convinced of it.
Get column inches.
Yeah, of course. Like, think about it. FIFA released the stats. They're slightly disappointing. And then players go on and rant about their gameplay and their stats. Like, it's genius. I'm not saying that's definitely what happens. I just assume that's what happens. But yeah, but those guys, do you know, those guys are proper gamers. Like Crouchy's not really a proper gamer. He's just a super competitive person. Yeah. But it comes back to what you're saying is, you know, people like me that just play fewer games and maybe not as much, but love it all the same. You bring that real life anger sometimes, or that frustration. And in Crouch's case, you know, he's a winner. He's a serial winner. He wants to win a football match. It's not in his nature to come on and just play and have fun. Whatever he says.
Are you usually an Xbox or a PlayStation guy? Do you flip around? Have you got one or the other?
I made the switch. So I was PlayStation for the last few years. And then it's being real, I did some work for Xbox and they sent me out an Xbox. And so I started playing on that and I just prefer it. I don't know why. I can't explain why. I think it's the controller. I've tried to reason this out in my head several times why I prefer it, and there's no real quantitative reason for me.
And what did you grow up playing? Because for me, it was the N64 was the first thing.
This is what I'm trying to do. So now I'm trying to get hold of an N64.
Yeah.
And it's so annoying because I've given all these consoles away over the years. At some point, I've gone to a charity store, whatever. So I'm really trying to get hold of... So when I get this garage done, my idea is to have them all there, all the games that I used to love playing. This is what I want. I want N64. I want GoldenEye. I want Zelda, not to play the game, but to just go fishing.
Yeah.
I used to love doing that. And then I also want to get a SNES. I want to go duck hunting.
Yeah.
That's okay to say.
Yeah. You can. That's just about fine, isn't it?
I want a Mega Drive where I remember playing...
Streets of Rage?
Yeah, of course. Best game ever, arguably. Yeah. I also played a rugby game and it was diagonal, the whole thing. So because obviously the way you pass a rugby ball, the mad thing about that game was they sort of pivoted the pitch, so you were permanently playing diagonally. Do you know what I mean? It really played with your eyes and you'd be sending the ball across. And then obviously like original FIFAs. And then there was 1 year where we went to PES, but I think everyone sort of moved over to PES for 1 year.
I think it was more than 1 year. I think it was 3 or 4 years of PES. But yeah. But before we get into PES, just to say that we put GoldenEye in our Hall of Game. Els, who was on the podcast with N, she's got it. She's got N64 at home. So she got it out and was like, GoldenEye now on a big telly. If you're going to play it again, don't play it on a big telly because it'll give you a migraine because it looks horrendous. You've got to play it on one of those tiny, massive, old tellies from back in the day.
But isn't that weird? So... I don't want to harp on about the garage because it starts to sound like a bit Partridge. So my dream is to be able to play GoldenEye on a big screen. But you're right. It probably wouldn't manage it, would it?
No.
It's a bit frustrating because you want to see it in quality, don't you? Yeah. I mean, that's ultimately the main thing. You can't just have a little TV on the side just for GoldenEye, you know? That would be insane.
Chris, thank you so much for your time. It's been lovely to chat to you.
Yeah, thank you. It's been fun.
So that was Chris. And it is tricky if you've sort of dipped out of gaming for a while. You know, I was even chatting to someone who never really played at all recently, but wanted to, now we've got, especially now, in last year, and now people have got time to kill, they want to experience something new. Getting back into gaming or getting into it, it can be a bit daunting, Shay, can't it?
It can, especially if you look at like the roster for a year, like how many games come out, like not even just big budget, like AAA games, but also like really cool indie titles that sometimes fly under the radar. It's like, it's almost like with too many TV shows that now they've gone from like 24 episodes to 13 episodes. It's like there's so much choice that it can be very, very overwhelming and really, really scary.
It's like the first time you get given a Netflix password and you're like, where do I start?
It's like when I got Game Pass for I think it was like £3 for 3 months, something like that, and I downloaded it and I was like, oh, holy world, this is so many games. I think I downloaded like 11 like within an hour.
That gives me anxiety just thinking about that, just them sitting there doing nothing and you're
wasting space on a hard drive, isn't it?
I mean, my advice, one of my mates recently is, I want to get back into it, and he got a Switch for Christmas and he's playing Mario Kart because that's sort of a nice reminder of his youth and he can get back into it. My advice to other people, download some
mobile games. There's loads of cool mobile games out there you can just play on your phone. And then you just sort of get used to the language of gaming again, don't you, before you sort of dip back into it. Because we were talking with Chris about FIFA, and it can be a bit off-putting if you start playing online immediately. It's quite steep. So mobile games are a good way to get back into it.
I would say check out this podcast, obviously, for the recommendations, but also
yes.
platforms yes. like Twitch and YouTube, like checking out like reviews on certain games or seeing what's hot, what people are playing, and have a browse and see if it's the sort of game that interests you is always a good point to go to. And plus, options like Game Pass, that they're constantly cycling things through. I know I've mentioned it every week, but it's like there's tons of games on there. The barrier to entry is very low. It's like in terms of money, like you can get like a trials for like £3, like Rage is saying. And then you've got options for hundreds of games. Just pick and choose and then try some out. Some you like, some you won't like. But it's fine. You're not chucking down £60 every single time to find out you're going to be heartbroken about a game.
He also wants to get a jazzy setup, Rage, like yours. I mean, it does help if you've managed to eke out a little corner of your house, you know, for games.
Definitely. So it's your little pad then, and it's like you, even if it's not like a PC setup, it's just a little like area in the living room with your console, and then you just have that corner where you know that it's your space. You can dive into a video game world and then just get completely sidetracked. Like that like zone you definitely need to create.
And actually, the process of actually wanting to find out what you want from games, I think what I like doing is going back to a game I'm really familiar with. I know it sounds really weird, but like Horizon Zero Dawn is like one of my favorite games of all time, and going back to that world, like being really familiar with taking down those massive machines, I'm like, okay, I've like relearned, you know, my love for gaming, or like my love for a specific kind of game. Let's go and do something completely different or find a sort of similar experience is usually how I kind of reset.
Yeah. Because that's what I was saying to my mate who got a Switch over Christmas. He wanted to get back in the game. He wasn't sure what to do. I said, get Mario Kart, mate, because you loved that when you were growing up. Yeah. Play it. You just start vibing with it again. And then you have a little look in the store, see what's knocking around, see what's on sale, pick up something on the cheap, and then sort of build it from there.
That's great. That's great advice.
Yeah. And I know Chris listens. So when you do set up your setup in the garage, we need pictures to start with.
Get the heating sorted as well.
Yeah, sort your heating out. That's Einel's lesson. Sorting out his setup in his garage. Sort out the heating.
Get some blankets.
I've got a hot water bottle on my feet, so that's also key. And also, next time you play Crouch It FIFA, I'd love video evidence of that, because that must be really fun. Anyway, let us know what your tips are for people who, you know, getting back into gaming, exploring it more. Hashtag PressX to continue. Any tips you got, any ideas, share it with us. Now, Rage, like we said at the top, where, why, what, how, who, Rust?
I don't know, man. I don't know. It's like Among Us. Like, been out for a year or two, and then someone plays it, and someone else sees that person play it, and they really enjoy it, and then all of a sudden it just explodes. It seems like Rust is the flavor of the month. It is difficult to get into. I will start with that. It's very difficult to get into.
Let's go right to the basics, right? Because I sort of know of Rust because I can remember we made a documentary with Player Unknowns once about PUBG. So we went out to, he was based in Korea, so we went out to Seoul to do a documentary on him and creation of that game. And that game is tied to a game called DayZ, which is also sort of tied to Rust. So I've kind of known about it for a while, but it first sort of came out in 2013, an early version of it. Right back to basics, what is it?
So Rust is a survival game, basically. You spawn on a beach, completely naked, you pick up a rock, you hammer a tree, you get wood, you take the wood, you make a base, you pick cloth, you make some clothes, and it's really down to the roots and the core of a survival game. It's not for everyone, right? And it very, very much is about survival of the fittest.
This sounds like too much manual work.
It's like real life. Well, I guess. But it's very much like the game is what you make it. It depends how many hours you put into the game, depends on what your experience is of the game. So you can build a shack, or you can build a house, or you can build a giant base. It really depends on how much effort you want to put into the game. And, you know, it's a very difficult game to get into. I've only played about 8 hours of it, which all of it was like last night with my mates. But you know what? I'm dying to get back on it tonight. Yeah. I'm so excited.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because there's something about those survival games. It's quite harsh, isn't it? Like, if you played much of it, but I think it's not as forgiving as other games where if you die, yeah, it's fine, you can just carry on and go again. It really makes you think about all of your choices, which is probably why it's so big on streams, I guess, because I guess the audience can help you make decisions.
Exactly.
And things like that.
Yeah, and it's very penalizing in a way that when you die, you have to start completely again. So, you know, you can respawn in the area in which that you created a base, but only if you're lucky enough to be able to build a sleeping bag, and thus no one else has destroyed the sleeping bag, because it is player versus player. There are people who are going to try and continuously kill you and ruin your experience, but that is part of the fun. You can either have a player versus player realm, or you can have like just a you versus the environment, so not PvP. But it is like a survival of the fittest, and it is a very difficult survival game, but that's what makes it so rewarding, that when you know you're all set up, you have your base and you have your guns and you have a car and you have a horse and you have a source of food. It's very rewarding because you know that you've basically built all that from just a naked man on a beach with a rock.
Yeah. You can get it. I forgot to say this earlier. You can get it on the PS4, the Xbox One, your PC, 15 quid and upwards. Now, these sorts of games became really popular when, like, The Walking Dead was big, and it was like those sorts of experiences were super popular. Why is it that today everybody seems to be playing? Where's this come from? I know it's funny, it happens, doesn't it, sometimes. Anybody know why you suddenly become popular again?
I think it's just certain streamers and YouTubers, the big guys, the big content creators, they want a different sort of entertainment. They want to try something new. Like you were saying earlier, how you feel like a little bit lost, and although you have to dedicate a lot of time, you can also dedicate like not a lot of time to it. And because these streamers are streaming to an audience who want to help them, they will help their experience. So they will give them everything that they need, and they don't have to like invest a lot of time into it.
Yeah.
It's definitely like when streamers are broadcasting a game onto their channel and it's something different, everyone seems to want to have a little piece of the cake and they want to play it.
Yeah. It seems to me, Shay, that a survival game like this is not a pure street. I've got a sneaky feeling that this one's not for you.
What gave it away? Was it my face? Like, do you know what it sounds like? You know, you remember when everyone was like panic buying at the beginning of the first lockdown? It's that kind of sense of desperation and despair. And they're like, let's play this in a video game. I'm like, I don't need any more of that. That's not a time I want to return to.
Have you ever done a survival? Because DayZ is the one that nearly got me. I was like, oh yeah, maybe I fancy a bit of that. But then I ended up playing PUBG instead a couple of years ago. Ainel?
Do you know what? I've always been looking at them from on the other side of the fence. Like, I've not tried them, but they have almost enticed me over. I know these games were kind of like the spark that kind of brought in Battle Royale, wasn't it? I guess like the next succession to what was happening in these games. And I do like the sense of it, but I hate starting again from the beginning. Like, I hate.
I've seen some footage on YouTube where, you know, someone has got a good couple of hours in the game. They all set up, they got all their stuff and their camps are good, and they just prey on newbies who are just starting, who are just sort of toddling around with a little bit of just and then just steal all this stuff. It's quite brutal. I can remember before Warzone came out, Escape to Tarkov, everybody was playing that.
Yeah. Everyone's playing that again now. That's another new flavour, yeah.
Survival, foraging, I don't know. Yeah, because it's interesting. It's games where there's a lot on the line. Do you know what I mean? If you make a mistake, you lose all of the stuff you've just spent hours. Yeah.
I mean, I've felt that many a times playing Sea of Thieves, and I was like, oh, I can't.
Yeah, there's definitely no like safety blanket with Rust, unless you're playing with a group of people, which I'd highly recommend. You'd have to be a certain type of person to play Rust alone. It's definitely one to pick up with your mates. Yeah. But like your mates can help you. So when you die, you're in a group together and you can see them, and then you'll run back and you'll pick up all your stuff again, and you'll continue just as normal. So as long as you like have friends to play with, you'll create like a tribe almost, and you'll be undefeatable.
So as long as you have friends, you can get through.
Yeah,
this. But if you don't, oh, I'm sorry.
Can you make friends? Like, say you're playing by yourself rather than if you see someone else, can you be friends with them?
Yeah, so last night I was running along with my rock and I saw this giant base with turrets on it, and I was like, oh, this is scary. And I ran over and I crouched behind this rock and I went, hello. And this person came towards me and they were like, hello. And they had an AK in my face.
Oh,
and I went, hi. Hi, how are you? And it was a girl, and she was like, hey, are you okay? And we both just started giggling at each other, because it's that surreal moment of there is another person that I do not know in front of me. And she showed me the rock to get more stone, and she gave me some wood and sent me on my way.
Ledge.
I made neighbors.
You made neighbors. It's like she's living in a big castle. And she's like, there's some rocks over there. Go on.
Yeah. But she helped me, and I thought that was really sweet, because she could have just outright killed me, but she didn't. She actually like showed humanity and showed me the way.
Oh, doesn't that make you feel good about life, eh? Look at
that.
She didn't, no. Maybe it's when I go back on the server tonight, I'll see her again. I'll be like, hello.
Yeah, this time she won't be so nice.
Yeah, maybe.
So I'm just looking here. It's had a peak of 1 million viewers. Concurrent viewers on Twitch, Rust. So there we are. So that's Rust. It's a game, like I said, everybody's talking about. 1 million peak concurrent viewers on Twitch at the moment. Rust. Been out for a while. Shay, what did the critics say when Rust came out?
I'm going to say another big S sound. I'm going to say 69, because I think the unforgiving nature of it might have put some critics.
Yeah, and I think it was released not quite finished. It's one of those games that sort of was in beta for a while.
Yeah.
Einel, what do you think?
Yeah, I think this score will be quite low, because games like these, they kind of... they expand over time once the developers keep adding updates and things. And I guess the point in which it's at now is almost, I guess, a shadow of what it was like before. I don't know. I'd say about 62. Yeah.
What do you think, Rach? You've started playing it.
I think about similar. This game was in development for 5 years. And I think that's what's put a lot of people off, because they don't want to come back to a game that it's like, is it finished yet? Question. So I think about like 67%.
It's time to get your party poppers out, Ridge.
Yay!
Someone's got it. Someone's got it on the nose.
Okay. Ready?
Okay, and earning the party poppers today, it's Shay, everybody. Well done.
Yay!
Hey!
69 on the nose. The Metacritic score. Rust. Let us know what you think. Are you back in on Rust? Should we be trying it? Are survival games a good idea at the moment? What do you think? Let us know. Hashtag press X to continue. And if you see Rage on the island, or if that was you that borrowed her some wood, well done you. Here's a big thumbs up from all of us. Yeah. Press X to continue. Right, okay, well, we had lots of controversy last week with the Hall of Game choice. And this week we've got Vicstar, who was our guest last week, telling us all about his Call of Duty hookup and giving us some YouTube tips as well. He's chosen the Hall of Game choice. This is what he's picked.
We've got a feature on our podcast. It's got a naff title, so excuse the naff title. It's called the Hall of Game.
Okay.
See what we did. See what we did there.
I see what you did there. Yes.
It's an acronym. But anyway, it is what it is. It's basically where we put absolute classics, right? So you had to pick a favourite game, a game to put in the Hall of Games.
This is a tough one.
So what are you saying?
It's a tough one, but for me, it actually has to be Halo 3. I feel like Halo 3 really revolutionized multiplayer gaming. It was one of the launch titles for the Xbox 360. I want to say back in 2004. I'm not sure if that's spot on. I'm gonna fact check.
Do it. Google it now. You can do it. We got time.
Okay. No, I got that wrong. It was 2007. Yeah. Along with the launch of the Xbox 360, and I just remember that was the first multiplayer game that I really got on board with. It had a great competitive ranked system, so you could kind of find out casually if you were the best out of your friends. It really gave you an incentive to work as a team, to find people kind of you enjoyed playing with. There were so many different ways to play. It had the Forge mode, which allowed you to create your own custom levels and content. A lot of us actually say that Halo 3 was well ahead of its time, and had YouTube gaming been popular then, Halo 3 would have been a forefront game in terms of you could make your own custom game modes, you could play cops and robbers, duck hunt, you could really customize what you could do on the game. And I feel like it took long strides in that. And in addition to that, it had great graphics for its time. It ran really smoothly. It was a top tier game. And for me, I feel like it's really when I went from being enjoying playing video games to I am now a gamer. This is what I do. Yeah. So have to put it there.
So there we have it. Halo from Vicstar to add into the Hall of Game. I mean, it's a franchise that deserves to be in there, doesn't it? To be fair, get Halo in.
Absolutely, but not Combat Evolved. That's a
choice.
I mean,
for him, very good, for three. Though.
It came out super polished. It had so many multiplayer modes. It added on new Xbox Live functionality that no one had had before. You could make your own levels in the Forge. Yes, I'd say number three. It's a good one.
You know what's interesting? Talking about Halo now and listening to Vicstar talking about Halo, it made me miss Halo. It made me think when the new one comes out, people are going to be, you know, there's a lot of pressure on that game being really good, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. Mm. Well, Halo 3, I remember when that released, that was probably the biggest game release I can ever imagine. I can't think of anything that was bigger than Halo 3 at that time. It was on, the marketing was everywhere. Everyone was talking about it. Everyone was excited for it. Halo Infinite, I wouldn't want to work at 343 at the minute.
The pressure was insane.
So Shay, you still look a bit.
I'm just not convinced. I feel like Halo Combat Evolved, it was like it kicked off the series. Like tonally, I was just sold. I remember playing that on the big original Xbox. I got it, like I got the original Xbox because I got like the highest grade.
Hey, big yourself up there, Shay.
Oh, she is.
A wee cherub. And yeah, I just remember being hooked at that age, like my tiny little mind being absolutely blown away by it. It's a good game, but Halo 3. Maybe it's because I'm not a big multiplayer person, so I never fully appreciated Halo 3, but Combat Evolved, that's like good sci-fi storytelling. It's good.
I mean, it does make sense, you know, multiplayer sort of kicked off Vicstar's YouTube career, so it makes perfect sense for him to be picking that one, I guess.
And it also had 4-player co-op local
combat. Yeah. What comes back to that?
What do you think? Did Vicstar make the right choice? Halo 3 in our Hall of Game. Let us know what you think. Hashtag press X to continue. And so many of you are sending your suggestions for the Hall of Game. It's great to have them. Keep them coming. Some classics like Command and Conquer being suggested. Yeah. Look, they might get themselves in there eventually, okay? We're just taking it one week at a time. But keep them coming. Hashtag press X to continue.
Thank you for sticking with us until the end, gang. See you on Thursday for the next episode of Press X. Bye-bye.